Yeah, that's a really powerful question.
That's a beautiful question.
That's a very wise question, Lauren.
Hello, and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the American West and beyond. The Right Question is supported in part by Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio, and by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. I'm Lauren Korn, speaking with poet Christine Wu, author of Familial Hungers. In this conversation, you'll hear me call this collection something of a soup, by which I meant and mean that it gives warm, tender, patient, and silky language to Christine's familial estrangements, her identity reckonings, and her language loss, alongside, and this is in the publisher's description, bubbling expectations for immigrant daughters and the chewy strands of colonial critique. Are you hungry yet, listeners? Let's dig in. Christine, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to The Right Question.
Thank you for having me.
So let's first talk about poetry generally, or more broadly. You took a number of years away from academia, right, before returning to earn your master's in poetry at the University of New Brunswick. We share this program in common. What did that time away from academia allow you? How did you change both as a person, as a poet in those years?
So that time away, I didn't intend to return to academia. I just thought of myself as kind of a failed poet. I had done my undergrad in creative writing, wanted to write, and then was kind of immediately struck by the reality that it's really hard to pay your bills when you're a poet. So I started working just like a 9-to-5 job, realized that at the end of the day, after a 9-to-5, I was exhausted and I didn't really have any writing in me. And so I had kind of set aside that dream of writing. And it wasn't until the beginning of the pandemic that I found myself in a job that I wasn't entirely happy with. And my partner suggested that I do an MA in writing because I had been, it was always something I talked about, but I never really did it because I didn't have the time. And he suggested I do an MA as a way to buy time to figure out what to do next. So I did that. I got funding for an MA and realized I had all of these poems in me that I think had been just like gestating in me for the past 10, 15 years that I hadn't been writing. And I think I actually needed that time away for these poems to kind of percolate inside me. When I was first in writing during my undergraduate, I wasn't really writing personal poems. I was writing what I thought was interesting, which was outside of myself. And also I think these poems that have now become this collection, Familial Hungers, they were too close to it in time and also too close to me. I needed some distance away from my family of origin, from where I grew up, from just the experiences that I needed to process. I needed the time to process and I needed some distance away. And when I came back to writing, I found that actually, even though I hadn't been writing for over a decade, that my mind and my body had been processing what I had experienced, and they were coming out as poems.
So Familial Hungers wouldn't then exist probably without both the time away, but then kind of that time to shape it in your MA. You don't believe, or it doesn't sound like this collection might exist, at least in the form that it takes now, without those gestation mm-hmm. periods, I guess, as you called them.
Yeah, I think for me, that time away was really worthwhile. I went to a lot of therapy. I tried to process the various things that I had lived through. And realized that poetry is a place, maybe one of the only places where I can hold contradictory feelings and thoughts. In most other places of my life, I'm a very black and white person, which my therapist is working on with me. I know that life is not black and white. It's very gray, but I find it really hard to operate in the world in the gray areas. And yet poetry, it kind of, the point is to explore that gray area and just leave it hanging. And there's, that's kind of the beauty of poetry, is that you can have all of these contradictory feelings and thoughts and experiences and just hold them in that poem, in that space.
Yeah, my own sort of exploration of poetry, and certainly my master's in poetry, was really sort of this crash course in not knowing the answers and exploring the questions in spite of that understanding. Mm-hmm. You know, exploring questions, exploring these things, knowing full well that the answers may not be on the other side, or as you've been saying, that the answers might be contradictory to one another.
Yes, and something that was really important to me as I was writing this collection is the idea that there's not really closure, because the relationships that I have with my family of origin are ongoing. We haven't reconciled. I was doing a lot of reading of different memoirs as kind of background research for this book. And I found that in a lot of particularly immigrant memoirs, there's often a moment where the speaker either reconciles with their family or has a moment where they reconcile with themselves and they're okay with kind of where they've landed. And in some ways I have some moments where I have accepted where I come from and who I am, but something that was really important in the writing of this book was it has an open-ended ending, and, there isn't that reconciliation moment. I'm still navigating a complicated relationship with my family. There is maybe a little bit more understanding on my part in terms of why I've been parented the way that I have, but it doesn't truly bring closure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's dig into your book, Into Familial Hungers. And if you don't mind, let's start with a reading. Will you read The Grocery Store Calls Them Cuties?
The grocery store calls them cuties. I know them as gum, my mother's gold, fragrant orbs heavy with hope, bursting with light, heaped in their clear plastic drawer, always at the ready. My mother fills the silences during my visit, reminds me of the gum in the fridge. Help yourself, she pleads. Clementines, her currency of care and clemency. Distanced by unlucky numbers, 4,444 kilometers, Chinese homophone for death, an ominous refrain. There are so many left when I leave, even when I eat as many as I can stomach, furiously unfurling peel after peel, shiny globules, weeping tart and sweet in my mouth. I wonder who will eat them after I'm gone. How many will end up rotting in their skins?
Thank you. I want to point to a line, Clementine's her currency of care. Christine, will you talk about how your relationship to your parents was both complicated by and buttressed by food?
So my parents are first generation immigrants. They came to Canada from British colonized India and Hong Kong. They're both ethnically Chinese, and they have a past that I don't fully know about. I have pieced together some of the things that I have picked up over the years from what they've told me, and have realized that they have gone through a lot of trauma that I think they haven't fully had the chance to process, the trauma of migration, of living in colonized places and then moving to another colonized place, of being othered, of not being familiar with their surroundings and the trauma of needing to survive all the time. And so these traumas, I think, were present in my childhood in the way that they parented my sister and myself. And they did their best. And what that meant was they didn't really know how to fully guide me in a world in between cultures. They also had this kind of constant fear of scarcity, of not having enough, based on what they grew up with. And so for them, food was something that was just really significant. It was something that could remind them of home, and it was something they could tangibly provide me in order to show love. Something I talk about when I introduce this book is that my family and I have a lot of communication barriers. There's a lot of things we don't talk about. We don't talk about our emotions. We don't talk about things that are hard or difficult. Part of that is just there's a linguistic barrier. I've lost a lot of the Cantonese that I grew up with, so there just isn't really a common language. And then part of that is just because it's so hard to talk about our relationship with each other. But I did notice as I was writing these poems and making the food that's in this collection that I think food remains a common language for us. So the question, have you eaten yet, is essentially how are you in many Asian languages. And I used to take that literally when my mom asked, and I thought it was kind of absurd that she would always ask me if I'd eaten, even if it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But really, she was asking me how I was, and I understand that now. And also, whenever I would visit home, there would kind of be all these unsaid things kind of looming heavy over us. And yeah, the first thing my mom would say is, have you eaten? Do you want to eat something? And she would make whatever I wanted to eat. And for her, that was the way to show me that she loved me and that this was her way of providing for her child.
Yeah, the idea of that food is its own language, a love language even, is so much what this book is about. You write in another poem, Multilingual, that instead of speaking to your mother, you, quote, cook tomato egg soup, 5 spiced chicken, ginger scallion fish. I'm curious, so we've talked a little bit about this language barrier and how food is its own language, certainly in your family, in these Asian cultures. I'm curious, though, about food and poetry, and maybe specifically your poetry. Apart from writing about food, how would you define that relationship, if that's not too broad a question?
I think both food and poetry exist in a space that is kind of beyond words. I know that the poetry that I write literally uses words, but I also think what is beautiful about poetry is that it's always trying to get at what is undescribable, whether that's a moment or a feeling. And it plays with the limitations of words, but tries to push as far as it can. And that, I think, is the difference between poetry and prose. There's more kind of pushing what a word or what a phrase can do. And I think in the same way, food is a language of love, as you mentioned, but it also, it tries to speak at the unspeakable, whether that's love, or on the flip side, the other side of the coin, which is hunger, something that I think has been present my whole family's lives. Like, I think you don't know food as love until you've experienced hunger. And so I think in that way, food says something about where you've been and what you intend for, like, this plate to mean.
Christine, there are a number of poems in the book titled Milk here, even more that have milk in them. Why do you reach for milk specifically, both as an object in your poems and as a metaphor?
Yeah, I mean, I think milk is just so, there's some really obvious metaphors. Milk is literally the first thing that babies eat, are completely sustained by once they're in the world. I am lactose intolerant, and so I can't have milk anymore. And I think maybe because of that, the idea of something you can't have, it makes it even more enticing. And so there are three milk poems, and actually initially they were one milk poem. It was one longer milk poem that I realized wanted to be three separate poems. So it became three separate poems that are all titled Milk, because I think there's just so many different facets of milk. The way that it nourishes us from our very birth, it's kind of universal amongst mammals. It's something that the human body can actually make and provide as sustenance. And then the kind of bittersweet absurdity of the fact that I was craving all of these foods that I remember growing up with that were milk-based or had dairy in them, and I could no longer, my body could no longer process it. And I was just thinking about how maybe a little too on the nose it was that these foods that reminded me of my mom, especially some of them foods that she would make for me, I could literally not digest. And it made me think of the correlation with our relationship and how we are trying to talk to each other. We're trying to show love, but doing it in ways that the other person can't quite digest or process. So that metaphor was, I think, too good to leave unexplored.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's talk about your relationship to your mother, specifically as it's kind of explored in the poem, Why I Stopped Coming Home for the Holidays. You write at the end of that poem that your hungers, yours and your mother's, they converge. Tell me about that line, how it keeps you both tethered to your mother and sort of polarizes you as well.
I think I'm still processing my relationship with my mother. She, as I've been writing this book, I've realized just how much love she had for my sister and myself, but also how we maybe went in completely different directions with our lives and in the way that our personalities are. And that is the polarization, I think, that we both are longing for love, for connection, but the way that we go about trying to get it in the world is completely different. And that brings about a lot of friction in the way that we are with each other, a lot of frustration around how the other person has chosen to live their life. And I think that is kind of at the root of seeing the ways that we are the same, seeing that we have these similar hungers for family, for connection, for some sort of harmony, and then realizing that the way that we address those hungers is completely different, and in sometimes some many ways contradictory to the way that the other person does it, and that in itself brings this estrangement, this disconnection, the literal opposite of what we're looking for.
You're listening to A Conversation with Poet Christine Wu. I'm Lauren Korn. This episode of The Right Question is supported by Chapter One Bookstore in Hamilton, Montana, a literary and community resource for the Bitterroot Valley, providing space to explore, discover, and share passions since 1974. More information can be found at chapteronebookstore.com. Christine, I'm hoping you will read another poem. Will you read Before You Ask?
So this is a poem after Jillian sees, he asks, where are you from? Before you ask. Every answer sounds like a lie. I'm from Saturday morning congee and after school pizza pockets. I'm from gently warmed milk before bed, from math contests and secondhand clothing, from bone broth simmered long before it hit the influencer market, baked pork chop rice and milk tea after church, that weekly hour of Chinese school where I read the Babysitter's Club under my desk, the sound of music every Christmas break, lashings from my father when I brought home a B+, long walks to school with my mother, who was afraid to let me cross the street alone, despite, or maybe because of, crossing an ocean on her own. I'm from a majority of minorities. Maybe you know it as Hongkoover? From adult onset lactose intolerance and the milk I no longer drink. Years of disused Cantonese, unable to read the Chinese menu at Wong's, phone calls left hanging, stilted bus shelter conversations with locals who keep trying to locate me, that white therapist who asked if I had a tiger mom, despite the hour I spent explaining our family dynamics. I'm from seven provinces away and unlikely to find okay. A country where I've never lived, reduced to a single aisle at the grocery store.
I want to focus on a word that it appears twice in this poem, despite. Talk about the way that that word, Christine, draws further tension into, and I'll borrow a phrase you use in the previous poem in this book, into the watered-down identity at the center of this book. Talk about that tension in despite.
I think, so this poem tries to bring into context the kind of the different cultures that I grew up in. And I think growing up, it was definitely difficult to be seen as other. And it was something that I was really kind of ashamed of. I was ashamed of being Chinese. And in the kind of process of becoming myself, I've realized there are so many things that are despite, that despite all these things that have been hard or have been good, or there's always kind of, there is another side to the story, I guess. And that, I think, is what I always try to capture in poetry, is that there are kind of multiple sides to a story, and all of those sides can be held together.
I like that. I'm gonna kind of riff on that, because I want to talk about this book as a whole. Words that I might use, warm, tender, patient, silky, these are all words that might describe a soup, this book as a soup. This book is a book about grief and anger. There's plenty of that in there. And yet, it is so rich and warm. And so I think this is a craft question, really. Will you talk about your ability to hold these two things in tandem? A language that is warm, a content that is often not so.
Yeah, you're right that this is a collection about grief and anger. And when it comes to such strong but abstract emotions, I think a way that I've been able to explore those emotions is through the lens of food. So I think the food is doing a lot of heavy lifting here, where it helps the reader, and also it helps me as I'm writing, to not be quite so literal with the emotion, to kind of approach it sideways through this lens of food in order to explore grief and anger more thoroughly and in more nuanced ways. The other thing is that there is some humor in the collection, and I think part of that is probably just a coping mechanism for things that are hard. But it also allows me to kind of stay with the grief and stay with the anger a little bit longer in order to finish the poem.
Christine, you just returned from a bit of a cross-country tour with another poet, another Canadian poet, Jessica Babinick. Her new collection is No One Knows Us There. You dubbed the tour, and I loved this, like hashtag No One Hungers, the No One Hungers tour. This is obviously a combination of the titles of your books. I'm curious about what new understanding of your own book, your own practice, your life as a poet, came from the tour, and beyond that, has come from these particular books being in conversation with each other through the tour.
When Jess and I planned our tour, we did it solely because we were good friends who wanted to see each other, and we happened to have books coming out in the same season. And then when we started touring, we realized that even though initially it seemed like these books were quite different, mine is about a second-generation immigrant family through the lens of food. Jessica's book is about losing her grandfather and grief and the grief and healing that comes with processing death. I think we quickly came to realize just how many parallels there were between the two collections, primarily about grief and the different ways that we attend to grief. And I think it's been really, really beautiful and really haunting to see that there are so many different ways to attend to grief. And yet there is kind of something at the center of that, that they share in common. I have realized that this book, my book, is more about grief than I initially thought. Like, I knew there was grief in there. I didn't think it was the main focus when I first was writing it. And I'm seeing now that it's kind of, there are undertones of grief in almost all of the poems. And in touring with Jessica, I have been able to also see just how much I value community and connection, and how maybe that hunger for connection has been at the root of my own family and at the root of these poems for so long. Wanting to tour with a friend, having a really great tour, realizing that part of that, the success of the tour, was that we got to do it together. Really kind of underscored how much I enjoy having connection and community, even though I've essentially run away from home.
I love that. And it sounds to me, you know, to go back to something you said. That was Christine Wu, author of Familial Hungers, out now from Brick Books. To listen to this conversation again, to share it with friends, or to learn more about Christine, head to mtpr.org. You've been listening to The Right Question. This episode was produced by Chris Moyles and me. I'm your host, Lauren Korn. Chris also engineered this episode. The artwork for The Right Question was designed by Molly Russell. Funding for The Right Question is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting this program since 2008. And thank you for listening. The Right Question is a production of Montana Public Radio.